हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवसरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Bhagavad Sandarbha Adhyayana 3, Adhikarna 2, Bhagavan's medium-sized form is omnipotent and all-pervasive. Page 18. Lord Krishna asks, you have said that I am not Narayana. Do you intend to say that I am Narayana in another way? In answer to this, Brahma says, O original Lord, who sets in motion Narayana? He is called Narayana because of his actions of sheltering the jivas. Since you have more power than he has as Adisha, you are also Narayan. A head of state is a king, and a leader of the kings is also a king. This means that Krishna is supreme because he is directly Swayam Bhagavan. This is shown in Krishna Sandarbha. So when he's saying he's not Narayan, means he's the source of Narayan. You know, he's beyond, so his position is even greater.
So Maharaj, actually, it is said that Narayan, one meaning is because his action is to shelter the jiva.
Yes, because ayana means to give shelter and nara means people.
Yes.
Lord Krishna argues, the wise understand that the elements arise from the Lord, nara. These elements are thus called nara. Because he takes shelter, ayana, of these elements, nara, he's called Narayana. Because it has many ways, because also how he enters all everything and all that. So then, because everybody's taking shelter of him, he's Narayana. Because he enters everything, he's Narayana. I think it also is because the waters that are there, and he rests on the waters, he's also called Narayana. So in so many ways, it has many, multiple meanings. It is said, Apo nara iti prokta apo vai nara shunavaha. Ayanam tasya ta purvam tena narayana smritaha. The word apa and nara are synonymous for water. Since the waters are considered the sons of Narayana, the primeval male or Mahavishnu. Footnote 1, nara means the offspring of Nara. Since these waters act as the bed, Ayana of Mahavishnu from the ancient past, he is called Narayana. Vishnu Purana 1:4-6. Right, so now we have like three explanations of that. In this way, he is well known as Narayana because he takes shelter of the water, Jala, called Nara because it arose, Bhu, from the Lord Nara. He is called Narayana. Why do you wish to reject what is well known and say something else? Brahma replies, This is not true that you take shelter of the water of devastation. That idea is your Maya. Maya here means the deceiving Shakti. Vishva Prakash says that Maya means cheating and mercy. You cannot be limited by water. By your Surup Shakti, you are not limited by limited objects. Right? So his pastime, he lays down on the water, but he doesn't actually take shelter, just like he enters the elements, but he doesn't actually take shelter. But the living entities, they take shelter of the Lord because they don't have any. That's how it works. Right? They are his energy. The four verses indicate that everything in this world, including Brahma, is within Krishna. Mantra Varna explains Narayana in the same way. Yach chakinchit jagat sarvam drishyate shruyate piva antarbahis chatat sarvam vyapya narayana stitaha. Narayana, spread everywhere, is situated inside and outside of whatever is seen and heard in the universe. Vriti. So that's his position. That is what is Narayana. But we're saying that Krishna is the source of Narayana. So therefore he's in the superior position. He's the origin. Yes.
Brahma, he has discussed with Narayana and Krishna.
Because Krishna is the one who played the flute.
Yes, yes.
Right? So he has that discussion.
Yes,
but at the same time, it's because this expansion is Narayana, therefore he considers himself the son of God. Vriti, in the next Anucheda, Lord Brahma proves that Lord Narayana is the shelter of Viraja River, and though he is lying in the causal ocean, he doesn't take shelter of the water. Hence, Lord Brahma proves from his own experience that the Lord's form is beyond the jurisdiction of material creation. Anucheda 34. Brahma uses his experience to prove that the Lord's form is not limited by water. Taj ched jalasta stam tava saj jagat vapu. Kim me nadrishtam bhagavams tadaiva. Kim vas sudrishtam hridi me tadaiva. Kim no sapatyeva punar vyadarshi. My dear Lord, if your body shelters the entire universe and lies on the water, why were you not seen by me when I searched for you? And why did you appear clearly in my heart? Why did you not then appear to my external vision? Srimad Bhagavatam 10:14-15. If it is true that your body, which is the shelter of the universe, Saj Jagat Vapuhu, is situated in water, why did I see you after entering the lotus stem and meditating for 100 years? O Lord, endowed with inconceivable powers, Bhagavan, if that body was illusory, visible only for a certain time due to illusion, why did I see that form wonderfully as a form of eternity, knowledge, and bliss, shushtu, in my heart by sudden realization, imperfect samadhi? And after samadhi, why did I not see that form externally? It is not true that your form is made of maya, limited by a particular time. This explanation is based on the story in the third canto. Right? So you're trying to establish that even though the material nature comes from him, he is not made up of material nature. He is beyond. That's an important part. Because we see is that these other philosophies, they miss this whole point. Because they just take everything back to pradhan, and then they stop there. And if there's a supreme, they're not really making the connection. You know, just like in the Mayavadis, then you have Brahman, but then Brahman covered by illusion, then you get the Jiva, right? And then the Jiva, in understanding this, comes to the position of knowledge. Now, Brahman accepting this knowledge now becomes Ishwar. But where does illusion, avidya, come from? And where does vidya come from? So the souls produce vidya? Because if we're producing vidya, why do we have to go elsewhere? Right? We'd be self-sufficient. But we have to take shelter of the Veda and the Guru to understand knowledge.
You know? That's why sometimes they say, you are God.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's what they're trying to get to. That's what they want to establish, that they are God. Yeah, because they consider themselves transcendental and merged with Brahman by having that understanding. So they call each other Narayana. But somehow or another, Ishwara, who's a Narayana, is in the mode of goodness and is not on that transcendental platform. So go figure.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? They can be God,
yeah.
You know, Narayana, but Narayana actually is not, you know, they're in a better position because they're the source of the knowledge by which Brahman takes on the quality of Ishwara. So actually that makes them, you know, it's just like Krishna expands as Mahavishnu. So that makes him Narayana. So in the same way, that makes them God. So, but the point is that where does Vidya and Avidya come from? Where does that potency come from? Where is it from? How can it cover Brahman? Brahman is all there is. And Brahman's supreme, so how can it be covered? If you're saying it's accepting, that means there's a person. There's personality. And then you say, no, there's no person. So the whole thing is once you get up to this level, they don't have any proper answers. You know, it's just like in physics. They're doing great until they get to time and space. At that point, they have nothing to say. You know, they speculate, but they really don't have anything to say. So in the same way as these other philosophies, it's that they'll take everything up to Pradhan, and then the Ishwara is there, but they don't really make the connection properly. Does that make sense? Yeah, so the point is when you get to this point, that's where it all falls apart. So for us, they have so many arguments that if we're using the inductive method, then they have so many arguments on the inductive level, because that's what they deal with, mental speculation. So whatever you come up with, they have answers for. They've been working at it for, you know, 1,000 years. You know, so, you know, if you have nothing else to do but sit in the monastery and that, you come up with things to argue about. Right? Because that's the only, you know, otherwise it's so goodness, you have to have a little passion, you know, so, you know, create an argument, you know. So the thing comes up is that from there, then it seems like they have so much to say and there's so many things to consider and this and that. And that and that, and how many people get to this point that we're talking, you know, about where you have Brahman, you have Maya, this origin of you don't get there. But now let's say we start with the descending process, then where does that come up as a possibility? Right? Because you have the Lord, he's a person, the Brahman and Paramatma are features of him. So where is this consideration that there's avidya separate from him? Or vidya separate from him. You know what I'm saying? So immediately, it's wrong. So it's not that, okay, well, they have some good points here, and they're also into renunciation, and we're renunciation, and Prabhupada says we follow the same path up to liberation. So, you know, so many things like that. But the point is yes, but where their renunciation and that, and where does that come from? From the Veda, not from them. It's not that they created this concept of sannyas and living in a monastery, and that's already there. That's in the Veda. That's in Mana, right? So any credit that they're doing, all that is there is just a saying that you know, we respect them for their, if they're sannyasis, for their renunciation, for their ashram. But their philosophy, we have nothing good to say about it.
When you say that their goal is to merge in the impersonal Brahman, with that, what they attain is Brahmananda. So now, according to the Vaishnava Siddhanta, we understand that Ananda is being attained only if there is an activity. So now when they say that they attain Brahmananda, but then Brahman is unchanging and there is no activity. So my question is the concept or the notion of Brahmananda existent or non-existent? Is
this a
fake that they have produced? Or
means, point is that the nature of the soul is ananda. And so then if you're not being affected by the material energy, then there's going to be some state of existence of happiness. But the whole point is that it's not positive. That's why we say it's not positive. It's not negative, but it's not positive. It's just neutral. You know, it's just like, let's say, you're sitting in your house, it's cold out, you know, inside is pleasantly warm, but you're not noticing the warmth because you've been in there, so it has the same temperature. There's nothing going wrong, there's nothing happening, you know, you can look out the window and everything's okay, right? So there's no negative problem there that you have to remove to gain sukha, right? But there's no positive the position that something's going on that you have that you're going to have the experience of the transcendental position, right? So what is it? That's what we're talking about. It's neutrality. It's just a neutral state. See, is that those in Shantaras, that neutrality is understanding, appreciating the personal form of the Lord, right? And that relationship with the Lord as a person. While the sages, they're also on that platform of liberation, but they're only on mukti, while the devotees are on the platform of Brahma-Bhuta. So they're seeing Krishna from that position. They accept his greatness and that, and the experience coming from that, appreciating the greatness of the Lord, that's what they're experiencing. Yes.
This connection, Jiva Goswami establishes another point that
The Mayavadis are called as such because they say that the Brahman doesn't have qualities. So it said that concept of Brahman not having qualities is illusion.
Well, we're saying?
Jiva Goswami establishes.
Yes, okay.
Because it should be either the impersonal radiance or an amsha of Bhagavan, but there is no concept as such that there is an absolute truth without any qualities.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah, because otherwise, how is the absolute truth? So it's just a nothingness, you know. What is that? So that's the point. It's just Buddhism.
So that concept itself is illusory. That's why they are Mayavadis. The
yeah.
Brahmavadis, they accept that it can have.
Yeah, it means that the point is they're just not distinguishing so much. That's the position is they're actually on the liberated platform. So then they're not. They see every Brahman is everything. There only is Brahman. So everything's Brahman. So appreciating that, then that's the what they experience. So when you compare it to the material world, then it seems very great. So that's the only way you can call it Brahmananda, when it's compared to the material world. You know? Does that make sense? You know? Like you have, you know, let's say, you come late and all that's left over is a few pieces of cold pizza. Right, sitting in the box on the thing. So, compared to nothing, it's good.
Pizza,
pizza. Yeah. Does that make sense? So, in comparing to the material world, the problems, therefore it is, you would call it ananda. But comparing it to the spiritual bliss of the ecstatic interaction with the Lord, there's no comparison. Then it's given... You know, it's just to give a general idea, if you take a drop from the ocean, unlimited ocean of prema, and you take a part of that, and then you take a fraction of that, then you could, that's the comparison. A fraction of a portion of a drop to unlimited. That's what you're dealing. Well, Brahmananda is like an ocean, but it's a limited ocean. You know, like ocean like we know, it's very big. Compared to a drop of happiness in the material world. Does that work? Okay.
Now, if we are convinced of that, we are automatically a devotee.
Yes.
We are convinced of that.
Yes. Well, that's why Krishna mentions in the Gita that you can have that conviction immediately.
Yes.
You don't have to go through the whole process of sadhana. You can just seeing that, you know, appreciating that, just surrender to the Lord. And it's done. So sadhana is when that surrender to the Lord is not happening, is not complete. You know? So then sadhana is used. But you can just immediately surrender. It works. Because the point is, it's the natural position. Udriti. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. Lord Brahma speaks, is it possible that this spiritual form arises from material water? It is not possible, because if you say he takes shelter, so that means then the water becomes the source. Right?
Yes.
That's the whole point, is that the water becomes the source of that. But he's not. He's just his pastime. He's sleeping on the water. Does that make sense? Resting on the water. It is not possible that this unlimited Narayana can be existing in the limited waters of Garbhodak. If that form is situated in the waters, then why could I not find that form after searching for a long time in the lotus stem? You may answer that you were there in the water, but I could not see you. But then how is it that I could see you through meditation? But then suddenly could not see you in meditation. Though you are in the water and seem to be limited, you hold within you the universes and are therefore unlimited. You exist in all places at all times. But by the covering of your yoga maya potency, you are sometimes visible and sometimes invisible. Right? So he's the source of these, but it's just pastime he's resting there. So the saying ayana, he takes shelter, means that's in the context of he's resting on the waters in this way. But he's still the shelter of the water. It's not that he's coming from the water. Just like Narayana is you know, takes shelter of Krishna because he's the source. You know, like we see Advaitacharya, he's Narayana, and he's taking shelter of Lord Chaitanya, right? And he goes to great trouble to, you know, I say, establish that position, right? Yeah. Vriti. In the next two anuchetas, the Lord's showing of all the cosmic creation within his belly to Mother Jashoda is cited as the proof that Lord Krishna is the Amshi and all other incarnations are its Amshas. Anucheta 35. It is true that Narayana is your Amsha. Right? So this is still the continuation of Brahma's conversation, right? It is true that Narayana is your Amsha. He is not illusory like the universal form. If your form in the water is also the universe, then your form should be included in the universe, right? Because that's his point. Why? I went and I could see the water. I couldn't see you. Like that. Because you would be included in the universe. Right? The Lord himself was shown that he, of whom Narayana is a portion, is within the universe. This was realized by Jashoda. Atraiva maya dhamana vatare yasya prapanchasya bahi sputasya kritsnasya chantar jahare jananya mayatvam eva prakati kritam te. O subduer of maya, appearing in this incarnation, you manifested the whole universe in your abdomen to your mother, even though it was clearly visible externally as well. Srimad Bhagavatam 10.14.6. Vriti, BBT Purport. Lord Brahma here describes the inconceivable spiritual potency of the Lord. We may find a pot within a house, but we can hardly expect to find the house within the same pot. By the Lord's spiritual potency, however, he can appear within this universe and simultaneously exhibit all the universes within his body. Right, means He's all the universes in his body, and then he can expand and then enter each universe. Right? He can do that simultaneously. One may argue that since the universe is seen by Mother Jashoda within Lord Krishna's abdomen, or within the Lord's body, they are different from the illusory material universes manifest externally. Here Lord Brahma refutes that argument. However, Lord Krishna is Maya Dhamana, the supreme controller of illusion. By the Lord's own supreme mystic potency, he can bewilder even illusion herself. And thus, the Lord actually exhibited all the material universes within his body. This is mayatvam, the supreme bewildering potency of the personality of God. Because they're all within his body. So he can manifest like that. The point is this is his inconceivable shakti, that he can do these seemingly contradictory things. Within a limited size, medium size form, all the universes are within, even though that's generally within Mahanarayan. But he is coming from Krishna. He's an Amsha of Krishna. So that means Krishna, everything's contained within him. So that's the point. There's no time and no space. Does that make sense? You know, just like the living entity, they are within the spiritual platform, right? But not really appreciating, not having that, you applying the discrimination to appreciate the difference between, you know, what is proper transcendental understanding. Then they're just seeing the activities and the elements and activities and relationships of things that are around them. They're not seeing them in the context of relationship to Krishna. Right? And so because of that, then they're that concept only exists in the material platform. Right? So because you can, you know, even see everything's Brahman, this and that, and everything like that from in the material world. But you're not seeing the relationship with Krishna. You know, as a person. So you may, you know. So the point is that it says that they glance across the Viraja, it's to the other bank. Mm-hmm. So one may say, but you're in the spiritual world, how could you do that? Because they're on the spiritual platform is their time and space. No. So therefore, what's the problem with the distance? There is no distance. So because you're seeing like that, then you see that, so now you become, committed to that kind of thinking. And so then you carry on your life that way. Because you can see is that Krishna's moving around in his pastimes in the world with people who are completely materially absorbed. And that, and it doesn't have a problem. His pastimes can go on and the material. That's the tatastha shakti, that these two potencies can function together. You know, Krishna's there performing his pastimes, and the king of Kashi is a materialist. You know, all the demons are materialists. So they're in Vrindavan, he's in Vrindavan. There's not a problem. These seeming contradictory, these contradictory energies by his achintya shakti can function together. There's no problem. Does that make sense? Yes, so the jiva then, by seeing that, he sees across to the other side because there's no space. There's no time. So he can see. But once he's committed to that, now he's under the control of time. So when the pastime winds up and becomes a apricot, then you become, you remain as prakat. And so then you take birth within the material world. Is that... Because there's no time and space. That's the thing, is Krishna is beyond these things. So for Krishna, that all the universes are within him, it's not a problem because they are already within him. He is unlimited, but within a medium-sized form. That means everything is within that medium-sized form. So if he wants to show the universes as one of the things inside his form, he can do that. Right, so to say that, oh, it has to be spiritual because this, that. No, the material world is within him. So he can show the material universes. It's not a problem. Right?
Maharaj.
Yeah.
Bhaktivinoda Thakur mentions that time is a relationship between the conditioned jiva and material prakriti.
Time, a relationship between the jiva and the conditioned jiva and material energy. Because you have means there's original spiritual time. But what we're dealing with, that we're seeing past, present, future, that's the material time. So that's, as I say, you were saying that it mentions that's Shiva. He's the lord of this material time. Because you see, you have the original time, and then you have the conversion of that. So in the same way as you have the original Purusha, and then you have the transformation like that. And so then he's he's the lord of material energy, he's the lord of time, he's the lord of false ego, like this. And that, and for the conditioned souls, then he controls the conditioned souls. Mm-hmm. Right? You know, they come out, then you know when it's time that he puts them back in to the material world. Mm-hmm. Yes?
Do you have a understanding that the universal form is illusory?
Yes.
So he's referring to the Vishwarupa, or he's referring to the external manifested universe?
The external manifestation, would you call that Vishwarupa? Because if that's the Vishwarupa, then what was Krishna showing Arjuna? The battlefield's there, everything's there, the horses are there, you know the guys playing the trumpets are there. It's all happening. So what's the difference? The universal form is how his potencies, are behind and make everything work. So it's him. But at the same time, it's illusory because it's just, that's the principle on which the material creation is based. Right? Because it's the transformation, how things work here. Because in the spiritual world, it's not like that. You know, it's a reflection of there, but that's the original. Does that make sense? You know, it's like the reflection in the mirror. It exists, but it's not real. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point, because it's temporarily manifest. Right? The principle is eternal. Just like Pradhan is eternal, but the manifestation of Pradhan, we call it temporary, so it's illusion. So in the same way, the principles of the Vishwarupa, they're eternal, but the point is it's only manifest when Krishna makes the creation. So therefore it falls within the category of context of temporary. So,
can we relate the state of consciousness beyond time and space to accept that there is some Krishna is inconceivable?
That's there, but you're going beyond that. Is that what makes it? Is that Prabhupada's explaining in the TLC that they are always in the present. That's mentioned in the Brahma Samhita verse, right? The Chintamani, it mentions about the present. The time is always in the present. So they're always dealing with what's happening now in relationship to Krishna. Because the point is it's all about Krishna. So what Yogamaya is arranging now, that's what they're focusing on and that's what they're dealing with.
Yes.
So they're always in the present. So there's no time.
Yes.
You don't have past. It means you have time, but there's no past, there's no future.
Yes. Yes.
Does that make sense? Because you're always in the present. That's why in the material world, the closest you can get to that is mode of goodness. That you're trying to deal in the present based on your duties. So your duties are, that's like, what am I supposed to do with this? You know, what's the thing? You know, so then you try to arrange. And so you have a set of rules. See, the more rules you have, the more things you can deal with. The more context you have for, at all times, to be able to be in the present and be in the mode of goodness. But this whole idea is I get rid of all rules. Then the point is then where am I living? How do I apply to the present? How do I define that something is to be done? It's what I want from it or what in the past has been there. So as soon as you restrict restriction, then you're restricted to the modes of passion and ignorance. That's just the fact. And then to try to compare that to even just the mundane mode of goodness, that's grandly foolish. And then to try to compare that to the spiritual process, the devotional service, then that's downright ignorance. You know, so that's the difficulty that comes up with these things, is that people talk, it sounds great, it sounds fabulous. You know, it's just like poetry. You can say whatever you want. You know, 'twas brillig, and the slithy toves did gyre and gimble in the wave. You know, but what does it mean? Yeah, that's the whole point. So that you can say whatever you like, as long as it sounds nice, it has, you know, alliteration and all the other things like that, the tone of voice you use. Like, you know, if you go to, you know, these bookshops or libraries and they do a dramatic reading and all that, it sounds fabulous, you know. You probably read the book, it's not that great, but the person's reading it with dramatic, and it's great, you know. Because the author wrote it, so then they're able to say it in the way that they want it to be, but it's not necessarily that their writing it necessarily brings that out, but they're able to do it, so you get the maximum benefit. You know, like that. So the whole point is just to use these things. They're mechanical skills. If you use them, they'll create a nice environment. You know what I'm saying? Like, let's say the person's on death row, right? And so you come in, decorate his whole cell like that, put nice flowers, you know, like that, put in a fan, do all these different things, have some pleasant music playing and all that. So you can create a pleasant atmosphere, but it doesn't necessarily match. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the point is that the transcendental platform is beyond all these things. Transcendence being beyond all this, then it's not dependent upon this. As the point is there. Krishna doesn't take shelter of this. Spiritual doesn't take shelter of this. Right? So the spiritual is beyond. But the point is the mechanics of it is just common. Does that make sense? Like intelligence, the mechanics of intelligence are the same in the spiritual and material world. It's just what you use it for, what level of consciousness you use it at. Cooking, it's the same techniques. It's not that Mother Jashoda, you know, does it differently. It's the same techniques. Like this. But then, you know, just the perfection of it and all that. And it's being done for Krishna. Well, here someone may know the science very nicely and it goes very well. But the point is being done for Krishna is the thing. Because here is that she cooks, it's just for Krishna. Right, so then it's in a glorious position. The chef, he has to cook for people that come walk in the door, and they may like it or may not like it. So what he's cooked is refined and delicate and this and that, but if they don't appreciate it, they don't give him the credit. You know what I'm saying? So therefore, he's dependent upon them to appreciate what he cooks. You know what I'm saying? So that's why, as before, as we could say is, okay, you're sitting in your house and you're cooking, and so, you know, big deal. You know, it's like that. Anybody could do that, you know. But you're doing something, you have an occupation, you go out, you open a restaurant, you do all this and that, you cook for the public, then you'll be recognized, and now that's something solid. But the point is in your house, people like what you cook, and the outside, sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. You know, it's like food critics are not famous for loving everything that they eat. You know? Does that make sense? Yeah. That's why they're critics. And you notice that some of them are not, but most of them, they're all skinny. That means they're not appreciating a lot, right?
Critical eating.
Yeah, critical. Yeah. So does that put them on the same platform as an academic?
I'm thinking.
Yeah.
You know,
critical
also,
eating.
Like the social awkwardness around them.
Yeah, yeah.
A lot of similarities.
Yes, yes, yes. So you're trying to get that the point that the spiritual is beyond all these things. That's the point. It's positive. You know what I'm saying? The platform of neutrality, that's there. That neutrality can have its connection to Krishna, you know, meaning you actually appreciate the person, or the connection to Krishna that you're just appreciating the absolute. You don't really see connected to the person. So like Shukadeva Goswami, he's not seeing the person, just the connection with the Absolute. So, of course, because it's connected with Krishna, there'll be some level of happiness there. But you can't compare it to the positive happiness. Because Brahmananda means there's no problems. It doesn't mean there's anything positive. Right, I'm not hungry, I'm not full.
Yes.
That's, you know, so the bliss of that, that's Brahmananda. Yeah. Yeah, so that's the whole point, is that we'll say, no, Brahmananda is so much greater. It's not. How can it be? Because why do we say, oh, but here, you know, it's just an ordinary thing. If you're on the Brahma, if you're liberated, that's a normal thing. That's where you're situated. So it becomes very ordinary. So as long as you remember the leaving the material world, then you're good. You know? But as soon as that's not so important anymore, then it becomes regular. Because that's just the platform of the soul. The soul is spiritual. That is their natural position. So, you know, like whoopee. You know? Like, you know how you say, the wealthy person is sitting in his house. Just sitting there, doing nothing. Nothing's going wrong, nothing's happening, he's existing there. Whoopee. Is that the existence he wants? Because we're looking at, oh, I'd love to be in that house. Because we're looking at what else, comparing it. But if that's where you are, then, so you have to do something. So this whole attachment to liberation and Brahmananda is a mental concoction. It's a material concoction. Otherwise, everyone in the spiritual world is situated spiritually because that's just the nature. All the energies are there. Prabhupada calls the material energy spiritual. She is a spiritual energy. She's just in control of the unconscious, you know, inferior energy.
So it comes from impiety.
Yeah, it's not a glorious thing. We try to make it glorious, but it's not. So,
can you say that in the material world, then Jnana and the Kriya Shaktis are prominent, whereas Ichcha Shakti of Krishna is not being utilized by the conditioned jivas for pleasing Krishna, and at the platform of Brahman, then Jnana and Kriya Shaktis are basically in the neutral form because there is absolutely no application to it, and in the spiritual world then you have the positive application of Jnana and Kriya Shaktis.
Yes, that wouldn't have been what we were discussing. Were we discussing that or not? No, I'm saying, now are you saying that just as a summary of what you've heard and so you just want to see if you're getting it right, or you're coming up with this as if it's something new?
But I'm correct with this understanding that these three levels are existing. Because how we have, I'm comparing it with the modes of goodness, passion and ignorance, how they are in the balanced state in Pradhan. And then you have them actually existing, like homogeneous and then heterogeneous. So then similarly, can we say that at the level of Brahman, then these three Shaktis, they are completely in the neutral form?
Why would they be in the neutral form? Material energy is still there, spiritual energy is still there. It's the Tathasta position, it's its own energy. What's the gain? I mean, what do you gain by focusing here?
No, I want to explain this concept to one devotee. That's what it is.
Then why does he need to hear this?
She's just at Sarinpur. So she was asking me regarding this.
One may argue that since the universe is seen by Mother Jashoda within Lord Krishna's abdomen, within the Lord's body, they are different from the illusory material universes manifest externally. Here Lord Brahma refutes that argument. However, Lord Krishna is Maya Dhamana, the supreme control of illusion. By the Lord's own supreme mystic potency, he can bewilder even illusion herself. And thus, the Lord actually exhibited all the universes, material universes within his body. This is mayatvam, the supreme bewildering potency of the personality of Godhead. Right? Because they're his energy, so they'll act how he likes. When the avatar named Krishna, who extinguishes maya, maya dhamana, appeared in this world, you showed to your mother that you did not have a form limited by matter, mayatvam, situated within universe, seen outside and inside your belly. You are within the universe and you are outside the universe. This is a display of maya. Actually, you, though of medium form, are spread everywhere through your inconceivable Sarup Shakti, O destroyer of maya, maya dhamana. Udvriti. The following excerpt from Jiva Dharma illuminates on how the Lord possessing medium-sized form can be omnipotent. Right, because that's the thing, is how he has a medium-sized form, but he is present everywhere. He's the source of all energies. Vrajana. Right? Sri Krishna possesses Madhya Makara, a medium-sized form. So how can he be Sarvagata, all-pervasive? If we accept the fact that he has a form, it automatically presupposes that he is restricted to one place. This reveals certain philosophical discrepancies. Firstly, if though having form he is restricted to one place, this inhibits his potency of being omnipresent. Secondly, by having a body, he would be forced to be under the subjugation of the three material modes, and thereby his absolute freedom and authority would be impinged upon. How can these contradictions be reconciled? Raghunath Das Babaji. My son, you have allowed yourself to be trapped by mundane logic and rationalization. So doubts cloud your mind. Because right? When you're using mundane logic, you're trying to fit things within time and space of what is our experience. But if you're dealing with the source of that, what's beyond that, then it doesn't fall under this category.
Can we say that, because we're all accustomed to logic.
Uh-huh.
At least some logic.
Yes, some logic.
And
yes, what was it? What's mine is mine, what's yours is mine. Very logical.
But for devotees, sometimes it's very difficult to see where they put things in their material logic and where they rely on faith. So what would be the balance between the two?
Because the thing is the faith doesn't mean it's not logical, but it's on the spiritual platform. But that's important to note, mm-hmm. is that faith means it's just like you have faith in something because you have knowledge about it. Right? You know, you have faith that the, you know, bus comes every day because you see it coming every day. You know, stuff like this. So it's not that faith simply means it's an unfounded sentiment. So to say that there's logic and there's faith, and this is what the academics try to do, the scientists.
Because what I've seen happens, that faith that is based on pratyaksha, that's not a problem. Mm-hmm. I mean, not based on pratyaksha, but they can see that it's logical because they can see it with their senses. But
yes.
In some areas where we put our faith and we don't see the proofs yet,
mm-hmm.
and we cannot use logic, or we should use logic. That's the areas that
yes,
we have.
But that's why we have the stories in Bhagavatam and the examples given there, that here are individuals who have followed this process and become perfect.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the story is. That's the importance of the Puranas, why the Puranas are more important than the Veda. Because the Veda is simply saying what the position is. But the Purana is showing how people have actually used it and attained perfection by it.
Okay. So it strengthens our faith.
Yes, yes. So that's the whole point. Because it's always by association that you advance. By association, then you're going to understand how something works. Means you're going to get realization. Means you've heard what is there. You've seen the other things they've said. Because the mind was going to work by... step by step. That's why we call it a gradual process, krame, like that. Is that I've heard some knowledge. I've never heard this before. But then I start to, you know, observe around me that that works. Okay, so now I have faith in that. Right? So now I hear something new. And then based on the previous one, then I can move forward step at a time. That's why we see that those that by seeing how Krishna interacts with the devotees, that loving exchange, and then they can just surrender to Krishna, then with that faith, then that's a superior faith. Because they are able to appreciate how that's there and apply it into their life. So the problem comes up here is that we're limited in our advancement based on our ability to have faith. You know, and if we're basing it on that we have to see it, then that'll take time. You know, because the point is Krishna being independent, then it's when you perform things with the proper devotion, that proper attitude, then he'll reveal. And if we say, well, I'll only surrender when he reveals, you know, then it's not happening. Because why does he have to reveal himself to someone who's not surrendered? Like that. So the whole point is that the logic won't be dissatisfied by the philosophical explanations, but it's not based on logic. So if we're intent on using the ascending process, we can only move up as quickly as we're able to understand things. And then, you know, if we're super intelligent, then it may move quicker, but then the problem is then there's more doubts. Right, because in the Vedic, you're very intelligent, but you're schooled in one thing. But in the modern, you're constantly bombarded by everything. Means, look up anything on. You take some subject, you know, whatever it is. Are cars good? Type that into the internet, and they'll give a whole thing on so many ways cars are good, this and that. And then you put in, are cars bad? You'll have just as much stuff. Anything. Whatever it is that you're into, you type it in, they'll have people saying it's fabulous and other people saying it's going to kill you. You know? So as Lord Chaitanya points out, by studying all these different things, all you develop is doubt. So that's why then, because they only have doubt, they don't have faith in anything except their own intelligence. That's why the modern academics have come up with this concept of critical thinking or what's the objective, you know, or the academic method and all that, because they can't function any other way. You know, it's just like, How much gossip does a gossip require? Unlimited. So that's all. They're just intellectual gossips. That's all. Right? And so because of that, they consider themselves superior. They're, you know, because the common person is an emotional gossip, but we're intellectual gossips. You know? And so if they don't have a doubt in something, it's good. But as soon as they have a doubt, the same thing that they, has been of value for so long, it's just tossed out. You know? Like this. So, you know, what's the character? What's the person? That person, personality? What are the relations? Because anything, if you have a doubt, can be thrown out. So how can you have a relationship with such an individual? Hence, the how you say, cliche of just these very, you know, lonely academics, you know, moving their own little dinky circle.
Can't even deal with each other.
Yeah, they can't deal with each other. You know, we only hear about, yeah, the university, it has this great department and this and that. The politics that goes on over that chair, like that, you know, with that, you know what I'm saying? You could write a Mahabharata about that. You know, it's like,
students don't even appreciate them.
No. Yeah, it's, I mean, if they do, then they're also, they're their next up-and-coming academic, you know, so. Yes?
The difficulty seems to be nowadays is that basically, as you described, we have two kinds of discussion. One is in absolute realm, one is in relative.
Mm-hmm.
But then what happens, even amongst devotees, they try to bring the absolute into relative. And say it's just a concept. It's not actually absolute. It's a concept or your idea or whoever's idea. So it's not an absolute thing. It's not an absolute truth.
Let me just interject here. Then you'll continue. Is that's for situations like that. That's why God made cast iron frying pans. Cricket bats will also work if you don't have, or, you know, those medium-sized aluminum baseball bats also come in quite handy at that time.
But,
brooms, you know, a chair if they're small enough, like that. At least they work in the saloons.
And nowadays, even gender, they say, actually they teach kids in American schools, not all of them, some of them, they say gender is just an idea. It's all same, but it's just a concept that the people somehow made up, so you don't have to worry about it.
And you should tell them then the thing is, since we're all equal, it's all the same. Then the students, the teacher, it's just a concept. It's actually made up and all that. So we should talk to the principal that, you know, you're getting, you know, whatever it is you're, you know, so many thousand per month, but all of us, we should share all that together. It's all one experience together and all that, so we should divide it all up.
And he should pay the tax.
Huh? Yeah, and he has to pay the tax because they're underage. And, but, you know, age is a concept, but at the same time, it's...
Madhvacharya did that. On the first day of his teaching, he did that the opening statement, the prayer is like, no, because I am Brahman, I offer obeisances to myself. So his teacher taught that. The comment written by somebody. Then he says, oh, if that means then in the beginning of the lecture, so you offered obeisances to me and I don't offer to you? Then he left that. After 3 days they resumed, after his teacher understand that there is.
Took him 3 days to digest.
Yeah. Trying to find some way out.
Okay. Yes. See, that is the importance of a particular aspect that's given in the, you know, you see in the Puranas that helps bridge that gap. That is the, you could say, the most unpopular aspects within our philosophy. Right? The parts that they just want means that, you know, the material world, you know, hogs, dogs, camels and asses, and, you know, how you say, the place of your birth, and, you know, this and that, and, you know, these kind of things, yeah, you know, like that. Or, you know, Krishna and the gopis and they're dancing, and then that's also cool. Right? But the point is the whole creation. That's what shows the metaphysical, where the transformation is. And you can see how it's working, how it becomes, how we get the material, and what its origin is. This is the part, you know, like your second canto, you know, your fifth, your 11th canto, you know, the last portion of Gita, You know, people quote from the first six chapters and some from the middle. Who quotes from the end except for the Sarvadharma and stuff like that? You know, but 13 through 17, who's quoting? You know, so that's the difficulty, is that that you could say, if you're trying to use a bridge in the way of just the intellect, that's the bridge. Right? One has to, and Krishna explains it. He puts a lot of time into that. You know, so that's the whole. As he puts five chapters into, you know, how the process works, he puts five chapters into understanding how the metaphysics work. Because if you don't understand the metaphysics, you can't actually apply it in all time, places, and circumstances. So that's the problem. So they're looking for these generalized things that by pratyaksha I see, and then if somebody comes up and proves it wrong, then it gets thrown out. But for us, we can confidently say this is how it works because we know the metaphysics. You know? Like that, yes.
Like Jiva Goswami points out in the six schools, then how everything is the objective of Vedic knowledge is Supreme Personality of Godhead. Hmm. Then he mentions also that by logic, one can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But maximum times where the mistake, where the weakness is within logic, there is this concept that when you are defining a logical concept, you have to name what are the presumptions or what you pre-assume, presuppose. But nobody mentions that. And because of that, they want discussions within their structure of the presumptions.
Yes. But they won't mention what the presumptions are, because their presumptions may not be as glorious as they would like them to be perceived as.
That's why as soon as that point is brought out, the acharyas always point out at your presumption that what your point you are presenting, because that's not important, because you already presumed something.
Well, that's very good. You just go after the presumption. Then what's the argument? Yeah, very good point. Right, so here is that we're dealing with the mechanics here because he's saying the presumptions of the metaphysics of the universal form of Mahatattva, you know, the primary creation, and so but that is coming because of its transformation of the internal of the Surup Shakti of the Lord, so it's inherent in the Lord. That's why we can say it's always going to be like this. So without this understanding, then one will think that, yes, the Vedic things, that's Indian and you can't use them. It's, you know, you could use it in India, but now we're Westerners, it's the modern time, you can't use these things. Because that's presupposing that Krishna's laws and Krishna aren't eternal and they don't run everything. That somehow or another, you know, the West is running the world. You know, like that. You know, you're probably closer if you go with the one, you know, who is it? I don't know if it's who runs the world or who rules the world. You know, and then it's girls, something like that, yeah. Yeah, so it's Maya Devi with her associates. You know. So like that, and then that from that is then the internal potency, then Yoga Maya. But the point is who rules them? That's Krishna. So the difficulty will come down is that without this middle stage, it becomes harder for us who are so accustomed to the inductive method. How do you bridge? Because like you see, is that somebody's either it's either Leela or just, you know, Sankirtan. You know, and the in between is it's not working. That's the whole point. Is that so? Nama Ruchi, Jiva Doya, but who's talking about Vaishnava Sangha? How is that being brought forward? Like Prabhupada, when in his League of Devotees, you know, he mentioned, you know, before is that the idea is that there was no temple. He had his place where they were working from, but it was totally a community-based system that everybody in their own home would just practice from there. And if there were some people that wanted to live in the ashram, you could. But if it did, then you'd work about, develop that. But otherwise, it was geared towards community. But that meant basically everyone either was having a program in their house or going to someone's house for a program. So the idea of association was regularly going on. But nowadays they talk community. Where's the association for that community? Where's the programs for it? Other than it's up to them to come to the temple and take part. So they have to come to the temple. They have to do all the service in the temple. They got to provide all the money for the temple. So what's the temple doing? You know?
Just exists.
Yeah, it's just existing. You know, so you might as well, you know, buy an old warehouse or something like that that just has facility. It has a kitchen, it has bathrooms, it has lots of space. And then, you know, whenever the community, then you use it.
Yeah. Many do that also.
Yeah, but I'm just saying, that's all the more, because it's not seen that it is a dynamic thing. So, The point is that if it's community-based, it means it's always going on, not just occasionally. You know, it has a regularity that's going on. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So then it's preaching, because you're cultivating the individuals. So there's the preaching aspect, there's the cultivation, and there's the taste. You only get taste if there's cultivation. The preaching is not what gives the taste. Of course, there's taste in preaching. Just like it says, the love Radharani has for Krishna. That's the sambandha. Then the activities being performed to express that love. It's the abhideya. But then the happiness she experiences in that love. That's the prayojana. Does that make sense? So, to some degree, we'll talk to sambandha as long as it's within the context of what we can relate to. And then we'll infer prayojana, or some will talk strongly on that, but how much is discussion is abhideya? Because abhideya means applied knowledge. The sambandha jnana that's applied, that's abhideya. It's not just an activity. It's the activity based on sambandha jnana that you're applying it practically. That's abhideya. Because when we say Krishna is the supreme, we should surrender to him. That's the knowledge. Applying that knowledge and surrendering, that's abhideya.
That's devotional service.
That's devotional service. Then you will taste Namaruchi. So there's always these positions. Because we can deal with this extreme, that extreme, but the combination, just like male and female, okay, you can relate to that, but then how they combine so that it works nicely, it's not being understood. It's just supposed to happen. Love's so powerful, everything just happens. But because of it not happening for so long, then like you're talking about, then there is no gender, it's just a concept, and this and that, and, you know, just like there's no dogs and cats, it's just a concept. You know, you could feed your cat dog food, your dog cat food. You know, it's just whichever you happen to feed him like that. And, you know, the dog could climb trees, could chase after mice, and the cat could bark and everything like that. But it's just, you know, we're just, you know, like how we're dealing, we're just programming to think like that. But actually not. So, you know, it doesn't make any sense, but that's, you know, how they're going. Because they don't understand abhideya. So then you're just saying it's all one. So then everything goes, activity goes, because they can't make activity work. They can't get happiness from the activity. They can't get happiness from the relationships or the individual positions. So you just make it a homogenous one. Right? So even though in technically it's a liberal position, you see it's not going to satisfy anybody. Because it doesn't address the actual nature. So this achinta beta beta tattva that there is simultaneous oneness with and difference from. So that's what's not being there, is that how the material world and spiritual world are the same, but how they're different. Because if it's a reflection, there has to be something similar. But at the same time, you have to be able to say it's different. If you say, no, the person and the reflection are exactly the same, there's, you know, that you can get the same benefit, there's something wrong. You have to see there's different. But if you say the person standing there and the person in the mirror, those are two different people. They have nothing to do with each other. Then that's wrong also. Is that? Yeah. So it's just a matter of, these are the things we should be discussing. Like we see here is that, you know, this, we heard this, you know, what is it? 7 years ago we were discussing this. No, actually six. So we were discussing this. No, it was seven. Yeah. Like that, we were discussing this. And so then we may not have caught how important this point is. You know, it's just another point in the philosophy. But now going through the, you know, Jiva Goswami's pointing out the differences there, then you see that how it's a point that's actually very, very important. And then you see things. Then you can make things work properly. Does that make sense? Yes, so it's just a matter of, that's why when you're explaining things, then you show it from that personal thing, the relationship aspects, the interactions, you show it from the metaphysical, you show it from all these different angles. That's vichar. So you show all the different things. You show how it's logical in one way, how it does in the other, how, so just whatever is required to get it to be appreciated. But if you talk on all those levels, then you'll see is that the people will gradually become conversant with it. But otherwise, if all we're talking is some kind of management, whatever's the latest and greatest management skill, and something from a self-help book, then who's going to understand this? And the fun part is the people that actually work in those fields, they actually are either who teach these things, you know, the self-help and the management, or they themselves are actual real-world, you know, professionals. You can talk the stuff we're talking about, the metaphysical and how it makes things work here. They'll buy it, you know, at a drop of a hat. They immediately see how it works. Because they know all the things, and they can't see the connection. We can't see the things or the connection. So just to get a few things, and we're thinking we're doing pretty good. But they're working with the field, and there's things they can't make sense out of. They see patterns, but they don't know what it is. And as soon as you explain what it is, immediately they catch it.
And they appreciate it.
And they start to use it. And they use it to advantage.
They use words like amazing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I was talking with one devotee, he's a business person. And, you know, remember some years back when we were, when we were using all the Chaturvyuha elements and showing how it works in the management. So when we were talking that, he picked it up. And he was explaining to me is that his workers are all karmis. And, you know, so his supervisors, managers, and all that. And so when he brings up some idea, like, hey, I think we should do like this, immediately they're talking about, so, you know, you're bringing, you know, is this the Sankarshan aspect of it? Or you're talking about the, you know, what are you talking, you know, which angle are you taking here? Literally. They catch it and they go, okay, which is that? And so, you know, that's so, they run their business by this Chaturvyuha. Yeah. Yeah. And so it's just immediate. I've never seen a professional, once they get past the, you know, why you have mud on your head and you're wearing bed sheets, that when we're taught this technical stuff that they don't appreciate it. I have never seen one that didn't. And we'll stop that point there. So the point is we're given everything. When Prabhupada says everything's in his books, that is actual literal. Because you can say, oh no, but there's so many technical points we can get from here and there. But if you don't know the principles they're working on, you can't use them. Literally. You know? So the point is, let's say a professional by karma is using the principle whether they actually know it or not. And the people who want to become professional that aren't, they're looking at the externals. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like, what do you call it? Yeah, that's good. Yeah. Okay. My son, Raghunath Das Babaji. My son, you have allowed yourself to be trapped by mundane logic and rationalization, so doubts cloud your mind. As long as the intelligence is encaged by the three material modes, it cannot properly perceive Shuddha-Sattva, pure goodness. Right? So that's why we study the modes, so we know what it is and we're not trapped by it. Right? And so then we see, and then what's the easiest way is that by engaging in devotional service, because that's goodness. Goodness means doing what you're supposed to be doing, what's authorized by Scripture. Pure goodness means doing that to please Krishna. And since the Vedas are all about that, that's actually the purport of the Vedas, is pure goodness. Right? So that's why we study these things, so we understand what's in what modes and this and that, so that we see that if I'm acting in that, it means if I'm doing something devotional, I don't have to analyze it. But at other points, then that's when you use this. Right? If you're, so.
Even devotional service, it's not that devotional service is covered by modes, but no. Those who perform devotional service do it from position, goodness, passion, or ignorance. It is actually possible. It is explained in the Gita.
Yes, but I'm saying it's the mechanics. The mechanics work that way. Now, you could be controlled by them or influenced by those, or you can be above them. It's just like, I don't have to be influenced by my frying pan to use it. Right? But some people say, whoa, wow, this is there. This is such a great friend. I'll never burn anything again and all that. You know, if something burned, oh, what happened? You know, bad pan, you know. Like, yeah, who can burn things in a nonstick pan, right? But there are people who can do it. You know, like
that. What happens if you put super glue in a nonstick pan?
Yeah, that also doesn't work
so good.
Somebody's
about to be wrong.
Yes. Okay. Maybe you should have put it in when it was cold first. Or something.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. So. It seems that it is one advantage to study the three guna, even if you can be in the guna, but to separate.
Yes, it means in the beginning you may be, but you start to see the difference, because that's how you start to break down attachment. When you identify with it, you're going to be very attached. Yes. When you don't identify with it, you may have the habit,
yes,
or the interest or the idea that can produce, but you start to see that you're already on the path to removing it.
Yes.
It's, that's the path of renunciation, is knowledge about what it is you're attached to, how it makes you attached. You know, it's just like if you're getting into trouble with something, if you know how it works, then it, you know, doesn't. If you know, let's say you know the city, the map of the city streets, then you don't keep ending up in those, in the you know, where there's a one way or a cul-de-sac or things like that. You know, you know how to go move around. But if you don't know, then you think, okay, we missed it here, I'll turn it the next, and it's a one way. And then you go to the next, you know, then. Yeah. So, as long as the intelligence is encaged by the three material modes, it cannot properly perceive Shuddhasattva, pure goodness. So, you can't really perceive fully devotional service. Right? You get an idea of it because it's the nature of the soul, and if to that sincerity Krishna reveals, then you get that faith. Right? Yet, in its vain attempt to do so, it merely interpolates the gross dimensions upon the spiritual platform of Shuddhasattva, and finally constructs a material picture. Right? So, means if I don't understand it, I'm just going to take my material platform and project that onto the spiritual.
Yeah.
Right? That's the meaning of the ropia. I'm going to project that on there and say it's like this. Right? And then it's like what Prabhu was saying about we have these presuppositions. Like that we have that this is the way things work. And so that means then I project that onto the spiritual world rather than no. There's the mechanics of how things work. The Kriya and Jnana are spiritual Shaktis. That's reflected in the material world. Right. So one has to, yeah. Otherwise you get a material picture. Right? So the karmis, they'll only have a material picture. But by association, they can start to appreciate the spiritual. And devotees, the more they associate, then the more they... Yeah. Intimidated by this overbearing and confounding concoction of the material mind, the material intelligence then seeks escape into the impersonal conception of monistic Brahman. Right? Because you weave this whole thing, is so complicated to try to make it work that it's a disturbance. And so then from that, then you want to get out of it. So then they look for the impersonal realization. Right? Because they construct the whole thing. It's just like it's very simple. But then you have to create a whole thing. Just like in the, what do you call it? Like in the marriage ceremony. I always find this a fun one. In the marriage ceremony, then you have the thing where the Luj Homa, the girl has the hands with the Luj or the puffed rice, and then she's going to put that into the fire. And then the boy stands next to her, and then he holds the hands. Right? But it's her thing, but he's just there, you know, supporting, taking part. It's her thing, and he's there to help. But so it's simple enough. It's very straightforward, like that. But then different communities will do different things with this. Like Bengalis, he won't stand next to her. He'll stand behind her and then wrap his arms around, and then, you know, so it has takes on that more romantic kind of thing like that. But we're just trying to pour puffed rice into the fire. You know what I'm saying? So people will do stuff like that, or, you know, the groom walks in. It works very well, but like in Rajasthan, he has to come on a horse with a sword, and then they hang something there. You know, it's supposed to be an obstacle. Then he, breaks the thing or destroys it, you know, like a pumpkin with a face on it or something. You know, it's like, you know, pinata. You have to get over, you know, how you say. So they're always doing something to complicate it. And so that's why at the end they have to, take sannyasa.
The rasa.
Huh?
They're churning the rasa.
Yeah, but the point is it's coming from their own, you know. The main things of what's creating the things is not appreciated. Yeah? Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandini.